Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
Tonight, I was going to talk to us about patient endurance, and specifically what it means to wait, what patient endurance really is. The Lord has really been, just recently in the last probably year and a half or so, speaking a lot to me about trust and a lot to me about gratitude and what it really means to wait. And he's been redefining those words for me because, honestly, I think for a long time, I really had a lacking version of what those things meant. I guess I was living by something that I thought was trust, and he's been saying, you know what? There's more to it. And so he's merciful, he's kind, he's leading me, he's showing me, and he redirects us gently with such patience, and I'm so thankful. But one morning I was reading in Psalm 37, and that passage I've always loved, but it really struck me. I was talking to the Lord and just like, God, why? And why are we in this hole? You know, we've been in a lot of different holes over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, but I was talking to him about this one, and very unexpectedly, that passage marked me in a way that I think changed me for the good. So first I want to look at the definition of wait. I love to look up the dictionary definition of things because I feel like it gives a lot of just new insight and what a word can mean. And so wait, what the dictionary says, to remain inactive, in a state of repose, or being at rest, peace, calm, as until something expected happens, to be available or in readiness, to remain neglected for a time, to delay something, to look forward to eagerly. And I really feel like as a church, in our individual lives, as a group, we have been waiting. We have been inactive. You know, it's like, God, we just want to do what you want us to do, but it feels like we're just sitting there. And, you know, he wants us to be at a place of repose, rest, peace, calm, but we fight against that so hard just in our flesh. And but again, it says to remain neglected for a time. I don't know about you, but I've definitely felt that way, that there's been this delay and there's been this neglect. And but it also says to look forward to eagerly. And I think we've been there too. So I'm just going to read Psalm 37 as we get started, 1 through 11. Do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the workers of iniquity, for they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. He shall bring forth your righteousness as the light and the justice as the noonday. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret, it only causes harm. For evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait on the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. The meek shall inherit the earth and delight themselves in the abundance of peace. And I first want to look at this verse 5, where it says, commit your way to the Lord, trust also in him. And that morning I was praying, God, why are we in this hole? Why are we having to go through this? You know, and I read that and I thought, commit your way to the Lord. And I'm thinking, God, we have done that, you know? And I feel like most of us in here, we have committed our way to Christ. We have said yes in a way that is sacrificial, in a way that we have laid down our lives and sacrificed much in order to follow him. And I was like, so why am I in this hole? I've committed my way to you. And he said, you know what? It's not simply the fact that you commit your way to me, your life to me, your decisions to me. You have to also trust me. And I guess for a long time, I saw those two things as the same because I thought, I mean, if I'm going to commit my whole life to God, surely I trust him, right? I mean, those two things kind of seem similar. But I realized in that moment, I've done part one and I wasn't doing part two. I wasn't trusting him also. Because when I committed my way to him, I committed to him to say, wherever you lead, whatever it looks like, I'm going to follow you. But he also wants us to trust him in the midst of it and to trust him when he leads through the valley of the shadow of death. Through the valley of the shadow of death. He wants us to trust him. And I want to take a minute and just look at Joseph, because I feel like Joseph, the Lord was really using him as an example in this thing that he's been trying to teach me about commit your way to me, but trust also in me. So Joseph was a man who learned to wait on God. He was a man who had everything going for him. He was the favorite son in a prominent family. He was given every opportunity. He was given an education. None of his brothers, his older brothers, were given that. He was given every opportunity. He had the favor of God resting on him, and he had the favor of man. His father loved him. He was his favorite. He had the word of God that he was going to be somebody, you know, that he was getting dreams from the Lord about great and mighty things that God was going to use him to do, and he was going to raise him up over and above everybody. And all of a sudden, in just a moment, all of these things were stripped away. In a moment, he was taken from the highest position to the lowest. And everything was taken away. He was torn away from his family. He was lied to about his father so that his father believed that he was dead, which if you can imagine, you know, if your parents think something has happened to you, how much would that hurt you also, knowing that they're in that kind of pain? And also that meant his father wasn't going to come looking for him. He was stuck. He had no way out, and he had no way to get back any semblance of his life. He was thrown into a hole in the ground, sold as a slave, lived as a slave. He was falsely accused of a scandal, very scandalous situation. He lost favor with his master. He lost his good name. He was thrown into prison for 2 years, completely forgotten about and completely alone. And so I really feel like a lot of us can relate to Joseph in this. You know, we have promises from the Lord. Things were going great. And then all of a sudden, everything is stripped away and we're just laid bare. And it's really this place, we're in this hole that we can't get ourselves out of. And in all of those things, God had a purpose for Joseph, and he has a purpose for us. And he's doing actually a really good thing. We see it now. You know, hindsight is always 20/20. We see in Joseph's life, wow, all of those things led up to this magnificent, glorious plan of God, the saving of many lives. What does it say? Do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. They did all of these things to him, and wrongly. He didn't deserve any of it. And he said, God did this to save lives. And so he suffered for a long time before he saw his deliverance, a long time with a lot of different types of suffering, completely alone, with no hope of getting out. And I found myself the other day just saying to the Lord, Lord, why are we in this hole? We've said yes. We're simply obeying you. And yet because we said yes, we're in a hole in the ground. Because we've said yes, we have all these problems. Because we've said yes, there's so much pain. And it's because I committed my way to you. Sometimes I wonder if Joseph said these words to the Lord when he was stuck in prison and forgotten about and alone. Because I committed my way to you, here I am. But Jesus says, you know what? Trust also in me. When you can't see how you're going to get out of it, trust also in me. And so when we commit our way to him and we choose to follow him, he's like the wind. You know, we can't tell where he comes from. We don't know where he's going, but we follow it. And sometimes he leads us to places that we're not comfortable with. And sometimes he leads us to places that we don't agree with. And he leads in a way that requires our faith, which means we can't see ahead. We can't see the next step. And I want to be able to trust him when I can't see. I want to learn that. Paul learned that. He said, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things, I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. He learned the secret of being content. He learned how to trust also in Christ. And we can't simply commit our way to the Lord. We have to also trust him. And how many times when we're pressed on every side, you know, this is me, I just feel like the Lord is pressing, the world is pressing, and he's allowing it, he's using it. But when he presses, how often do I, just kind of crumple? How often do I get struck down with fear? How often do I fret and let those circumstances weigh in a way that's unhealthy, in a way that threatens to defeat me? But every time, if I just make it through, the testimony in hindsight is always, Lord, you were faithful. You were faithful. And when I doubted and I thought, there's no way out, we're gonna perish, you were faithful, and you brought us through every single time. The testimony is always pressed but not crushed, persecuted but not abandoned, struck down but not destroyed. And so, you know, in Psalms, in that same chapter of chapter 37, David goes on to say, I was young and now I'm old, and I have never seen the righteous forsaken or their children begging bread. And, you know, that's a perspective of someone who has lived their life. And looking back, they see, I have never seen the Lord not be faithful to me. I have never seen the Lord not come through for me. I have never seen the Lord abandon me and not deliver me. And, you know, Proverbs 16, the silver-haired head is a crown of glory if it is found in the way of righteousness. Paul understood that God was faithful no matter what, and he learned that before he could see. And I want to get there. I want to learn to trust him before he delivers me. And so really, I as I kept reading in that Psalm 37, that chapter, the Lord began to speak to me, what does trust really mean? And what does wait really mean? What is patient endurance really? And I want to read that Psalm 37:7, rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Trusting is resting. Sometimes I wonder if Joseph learned this secret. His way was committed to the Lord. It led him to a hole in the ground and all of these other troubles, slave labor, prison, a scandal. Did he learn to trust in the midst of the pain? Was he anxious, and did he have anxiety and fret, and you know, or did he learn to walk and with rest and trust? And we know that he couldn't see ahead, but I believe he really did learn that. This resting in the Lord, this patient endurance, is trusting him from a place of rest instead of fret. It's supposed to be how we wait. For so long, I just kind of thought, all right, if I can just stick my head down and plow through and just make it to the end, then I'll be okay. You know, I can just grin and bear it and just get through this and just survive. And I just don't think that's what patient endurance really is. The scripture, that's not how it defines patient endurance. That's not how it defines waiting. It defines waiting as resting. Trusting equals rest. And, you know, he says, in all these things, we're meant to be more than conquerors through him who loved us. I don't want to just survive to the end and make it to the end. I want to learn how to rest in God, fully assured of his faithfulness, of his provision, of his goodness to deliver me in his time and his way when I'm in the midst of it. And so this kind of waiting, it's a choice. Rest is a choice. We have the choice that we can participate with or we cannot participate with. And James 1, 2 through 5 says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. It says that we have to let patience have its work. We participate with it. We have control. We can let patience work itself out in us, or we can fight against it with everything we have. We have to let him make us patient. We have to let his patience work itself out in us. 1 Peter 5, 6 through 10 says, humble yourselves. It's up to us. The Lord is going to send situations to humble us. We can either partner with that and humble ourselves, or we can fight against it and really for nothing, right? Therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time, he's going to do it. Cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. And the God of all grace, after you have suffered a little while, will himself restore you and make you strong, firm, and steadfast. Again, humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. This patient waiting is a choice that we can choose to participate with. You know, it's a lot like labor. When you're in labor and your body is contracting, is trying to push a baby out, it is the most painful thing ever. And you can either let patience have its work, or you can struggle against it and make it far worse. They say, you know, when you're in labor and you're having contractions, you need to, the first instinct in your body when it's in pain is to tense up, you know, and to try and fight against it. But they say if you'll just relax and let the contractions happen and let the pain come, that baby will be out so much faster. And that really is what we're doing. You know, when we're letting patience have its work, we're under this pain. We're under this pressure. And if we just settle and stop trying to fight against it, against the process that the Lord is trying to do in us, if we settle down, settle in, you know, that's what he calls us to do, rest, to rest in him, to trust him from that place of rest, not from that place of anxious fret, which is what I've been doing. And he was like, you're doing that. And so we have to speak peace to our own souls and find contentment and a home in the midst of this pain and pressure. We can find a home in him. And so, you know, that Psalm 37 says, trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. This entire passage is about David. He's looking around him. He's looking at the wicked and he's saying, God, they are prospering in their way, you know. They are living for their own needs, for their own wants, and it's working for them. Like, they have everything they need. They're doing great. And here I am. I have committed my way to you, and I am lacking. I'm suffering. There's pain. There's hardship. And he says, dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. Dwell in that place wherever the Lord has you and feed on his faithfulness. Find that rest in him. And so, you know, the Lord spoke to me. He's, for so long, I saw God as against me. I mean, I know God is for you. He's not against you. You know, I knew that with my head, but it's one thing to know its truth and to actually live according to it and like perceive things through it. And so he spoke to me one day and he said, I want to be your best friend. And it, like, a switch went off in my head, because for so long, my living reality and my lens through which I processed, if I was honest, was more like, here I am with all of my troubles and all of my pain, real pain, deep pain. And here you are on this side and you're giving it to me. And you're doing these things for my good. You know, I know it. You're doing these things for my good. And I'm just over here like, okay. And I saw it was him and me over here with my pain and him allowing it and doing those things. And he said, I want to be your best friend. And all of a sudden, I was like, he came to my side. And now we were together. We were facing the struggle. Together we were facing the pain. Together we were facing the pressure. And it was like, it changed everything for me. Because in a moment, he altered my perception of this pain, of this hole, of this pressure that he was giving. And in a moment, my future, my situation, everything I saw differently. I began to face them no longer alone and against him, but he was right there with me, facing them with me. And that seems so, like, everybody knows that, right? But, and I knew that in my head, but that wasn't the world, the view in which I was seeing my situation. And he was like, let me get in there with you. I'm not against you. I'm not over here with your troubles. I'm right here with you, facing them with you, and let me do that. And that's the only way we can find rest in difficulty. It's the only way we can trust also in him, is when he is right by our side, when we see him and we live with that reality that he is with me. And all of a sudden, peace came rushing in. All of a sudden, he was someone I could trust on a new level. All of a sudden, I could rest because I knew he's not against me. He's not going to destroy me. He's with me, facing these things with me. He's standing with me, not opposite with me. And so he wants to be our best friend. He loves like that, like a best friend. You know, Gabby the other day. So JC got her feelings hurt by someone, and Gabby was like, well, if I see that girl again, I am going to tell her, you don't talk to my sister that way. And I thought, that's what a best friend does, right? They stand up for you when there is opposition. And so we're trying to talk to her about, okay, there's a right way and a wrong way to do that. But I love that you want to defend your sister. That's great. And so, but Jesus does that. You know, he comes and he says, oh, let me just tell you, you want to pick on my daughter? You want to pick on my son? Let me just tell you something, you know, and he goes at it with you. That's what a best friend does. And that's the picture that I was completely changed my perspective. And so when things don't change and I still have to wait and things are still not changing and they actually just get harder, never say, well, it can't get any worse. It always can get worse. When that happens, I just need to calm down and stop worrying and trust God from a place of rest. He doesn't want me to worry about these things. He wants me to keep my eyes on him. And I'm preaching this because he's having to speak this to me because I'm bad at it. And so, anyway, when we engage with waiting, we're letting patience have its work. By taking our anxiety, our fret, by taking our disappointments, our pain, when we take them to the cross, when we trust in the man that is there, we find that rest for our souls. And so I looked up, again, I like definitions of things. I looked up what fret means because Psalm 37 says, do not fret. Refrain from anger and turn from wrath. Do not fret. It only causes harm. And I guess I understood what fret means, but when I look up the definition, it gives me a whole new perspective. So fret means to feel or express worry, annoyance, discontent, to become eaten, worn or corroded. You're becoming corroded. This is what happens when we fret. It's not an, you know, if this isn't an aging factor, I don't know what is. So my thing, okay, if I want to look young, I just need to not fret. Because what does that be? To become eaten and corroded. Okay, I don't want that. So I better learn to rest or else I'm going to age way faster than I ever planned to. So don't fret. Refrain from anger, turn from wrath. Do not fret, it only causes harm. If we're in a season of waiting and we find ourselves angry, this may be evidence of fret. This may be evidence that we haven't learned to trust also in him, to rest. When we have angst in our hearts, and anxiety is building and there's pressure and pressure. You know, I get so angry because I'm so frustrated and I'm fragile on the inside. And the scripture, this passage, Psalm 37, again, is specifically talking about looking around and seeing how it's working for everybody else. And because I've followed you, there's this pain. But it's also talking about, you know what? Delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. Instead of chasing after those desires yourself, you commit your way to him. You're trusting him to give you the desires of your heart. You're trusting him to provide your way. Instead of making your own way, instead of providing for your own self in a way that he hasn't led you to, you follow me, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all of these things will be given to you. And so I just had to say, you know what? I've got to stop looking around and just fix my eyes on Jesus, who is the author of this story, the author of my faith. He's the author of this story that he is fleshing out. He's the perfecter of this faith. So not only did he, you know, write this story into existence, he's going to perfect it, who endured such opposition. And it says, consider him who endured such opposition. To consider something means you are meditating. Your eyes are on him. You are considering him who endured this opposition so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. We have to take our eyes off of our circumstances and off of everything around us and look to him. And so it says, turn from wrath. That Psalm 37 turns from wrath. Fret is a choice, just like rest is a choice. I'm not good at making that choice yet. I'm really trying. And that's why the Lord keeps bringing it up because I need him to. But turning from wrath is a choice. We have to turn from wrath because when we fret, it leads only to harm. It only causes harm. And unfortunately, it doesn't just cause harm to ourselves. It's a ripple effect. You know, if you think about it, when Adam and Eve sinned, that's like the biggest ripple effect you could ever imagine. The rest of humanity for the rest of time is affected by their one sin. All of creation is affected because of their one sin. Our sin, our fret, our anger, our wrath in those times of pressure, it has a ripple effect. It causes harm, not only to ourselves, but also to those around us. When I find myself, I'm fretting, or I'm anxious, or I'm angry, or frustrated, or whatever in a situation, I notice that I'm shorter with my children. I snap at them more. You know, I have a bad attitude with people around me. I take it out on those around me. They didn't make me angry. I'm not upset at them. I get frustrated with my life, and yet it comes out on others. It's because I'm not choosing to rest in God. I'm choosing to let my circumstances get the best of me and my worries get the best of me. And so I want to learn to consider it pure joy when I face trials, to rest in Christ. The only way we can do that is with the right perspective. And so, you know, where it says, let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Perfect and complete. That does not happen until you're like in heaven, right? It doesn't happen in our lifetime. It's a lifelong process. It's a lifetime learning process. We don't reach perfect and complete, lacking nothing until the end. And so this lifetime of letting patience have its work, this lifetime of learning how to wait in a way that is trusting, in a way where we rest and we're not fretting, learning how to patiently endure. And so I want to learn that. I want to learn it now. You know, I want to be good at it so that I can be strong for my children, so that I can be strong for the people that the Lord brings in my life, so that I can be a place of peace for people. In high school, I had so much anxiety. I would worry all the time, and I would just feel so much unrest a lot of the time. And there were certain people in my life that when I was around them, it would immediately fall off, and I would feel peace. I mean, it was incredible. It was, and I didn't really understand. I understood a little bit when it was happening then. I understand it more now. But I would kind of live in this, like, anxious, worried unrest in my spirit, and I would get around certain people, and there would just be, it would just be peace. I would feel it within me. I want to be one of those peace people. You know, when people come around me, that all of their troubles fall away because I walk with the Lord down the path that he's given me, and I fully trust and I fully rest in him. I want to be that. It's like, okay, well, Lord, that'll be a miracle because I am the person that is anxious and, you know, I have been my whole life. And so I know, but I also know the Lord wants to turn our biggest weakness into our greatest glory. And I've seen him do it over and over and over again. And so, you know, yes, Lord, do it. So we have to have this eternal perspective, okay? The only way that we can count it all joy and let patience have its work is when we submit to the process. And I think the only way that we can submit to his process is with an eternal perspective. If we're talking about a lifetime, we're talking about a lifetime learning process, then we have to get our treasure off of this world and into the next. We have to set our minds on things above and not on earthly things. That same passage in James, where it says, let patience have its work, it goes on, that next few verses says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. This is just after he's talking about count it all joy when you face trials, let patience have its work. Then if you lack wisdom, well, what does Psalm 90 say? So teach us to number our days aright that we may gain a heart of wisdom. It is wisdom to number our days aright, to ask the Lord, Lord, let me see my life from a heavenly perspective. Let me look at my life in a new way. And when we remember how fleeting our lives are, you know, it changes the way we see everything. It changes the way we see our circumstances. It changes the way we approach our circumstances. And I want to live wisely and fully alive. I don't want to just grin and bear it, stick my head down, and just make it to the end. I want to be fully alive in the process. And that's the Lord's will for us. And, you know, and so I want the way that I respond to my circumstances to change. But that's up to me. And I was reading earlier this week in Hebrews, you know, where it says in, it's Hebrews 12, and he's talking about Esau. And he said, for one morsel of food, Esau sold his birthright. For one morsel of food, he sold his entire inheritance, the rest of his life. He sold it away. And not only his life, but again, the ripple effect, every generation in his family line after him. And so for momentary comfort and relief and deliverance, he gave up not only his inheritance, but the inheritance of all of his children and relatives after him. I don't want to dig up with doubt what the Lord planted in faith. I don't want to give up my birthright, my inheritance, for temporary relief from my pain. I don't want to give it up for a quick fix, you know, for a morsel of comfort. I want to learn to patiently endure, to wait for the Lord's deliverance, and not to get out of the furnace before it's time. And so Galatians 6:9 says, let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. And he will do this. He will make your righteous reward shine like the dawn, the vindication of your cause like the noonday sun. One of the hardest things is when the people around us, the people closest to us, don't understand why we're making the decisions that we're making. You know, why did you start a house of prayer? What even is that? You know, why did you leave your job and come do this thing, this Daniel Academy thing that's not even real? Like, that's not even a real thing, you know? And you have these people, they're close to you and they don't get it. And you're just like, I'm just following the Lord. And they don't understand that either, you know? And so there's all of this, you feel so uncomfortable, you know, because you're so misunderstood. But he says, you know what? Don't give up. Don't let those things weigh on you. He's going to make your righteous reward shine like the dawn, the vindication of your cause like the noonday sun. One day, wisdom will be proved right by her children. And the fruit of what comes out is going to prove that your decisions and you committing your way to the Lord was the right thing to do. And he's going to reveal it. And so we just have to wait on God. He's going to deliver us. For a long time, you know, Brad and I, we've been ministering for a long time. And for a long time, whenever people, like in our church, or back then it was just a small group, when our people in our small group were suffering, when they were having a hardship, we would just rush in and try and do everything we could to deliver them. You know, they were having financial trouble. Let's give you as much money as we can give you. You know, they had emotional trouble. Man, we are going to be there for you. And we're going to give you, and we're going to try and fix all of your problems. And really, the Lord let us do it for a long time. We couldn't fix everybody's problems, you know, but for a long time, we had some strength, you know, and we were able to, like, actually help people. And I remember I was at a gas station filling up my car with gas, and I had this revelation. Oh my gosh, I can't help people anymore. The Lord had brought our small group to a place where everybody had such individual, hard, awful problems and struggles, and we did too. And none of us, they were problems that no human person could ever fix. No human person could ever, like, lift out of. And I just realized, you are doing this. I can't fix their problems. I can't help them. What have you called me to do if I can't help the people that you've given me, right? But he was like, I want this. I am bringing you to this place where your only deliverance is me. And you can't get yourself out of it, and you can't get them out of it, and it's frustrating. And I was frustrated, and I did not like that, because I really liked being able to help people, and I liked having whatever they needed, you know? And the Lord was gracious to allow that for a time. And then he was like, you know what? It's time to grow up, and it's time to trust me for my provision and my deliverance. You're not God. I am. And I want them to lean on me, and I want them to learn how to wait on me, and I want you to also. So there you go. And, you know, so for a long time, we're still in that. I just realized I can't help anybody. Only God can. And that's what he did to Joseph. He put him in a hole that only he could get him out of. I mean, you know, Joseph, you think when the baker, you know, and the cupbearer were in prison with him, and it was like, oh, here's my chance. You know, they like me. The prison guards like me. Everybody likes me, you know, and they're going to go and they're going to tell him. They said they would. I made sure of it. And then they completely forget about Joseph, and he's just left like 2 years of this in a prison, forgotten about. Only God could rescue him. I want to talk a little bit about Sarah. I've been, you know, the Lord kind of showed me not flattering things about myself through Sarah, and I'll share them with you. Sarah is, you know, we know her story. The Lord spoke to Abraham, you're going to have, you know, nations come out of you. And Sarah takes matters into her own hands. She tries to make it happen. So when God speaks to Abraham, he was 75, okay? And the Lord didn't just call him to leave his home. He said that he would make him a great nation. He says, I will make your offspring as the dust of the earth, so that if one could count the dust of the earth, your offspring would also be counted. To me, that's like guy language, you know? I'm going to make your offspring like the dust of the earth. And I'm telling you right now, Sarah heard that word that the Lord gave to Abraham, and she said, all she heard was baby. God is going to give me a son. The one thing that she had wanted for forever, God's going to give it to me. A son, a glimmer of hope started to flicker in her heart. Anticipation arose in her heart. At that very moment, hope came alive in her. I just imagine her thinking, oh my gosh, can I even dare to hope for this, right? I've 75 years is Abraham, so I guess she was 74. I have waited and there's nothing. I mean, that's over and gone. I've settled that, you know, I'm settled with that. Like, I'm not going to get that. And all of a sudden the Lord's like, I'm going to give it to you. And all of this hope and desire that she had just locked away because it wasn't real for her, he started to open that up. And, you know, I can just see her, you know, when we hope for something and we want something so badly, we want the Lord to do something and it's just not happening. So many times we try and just stick it inside, lock it away, because that is what's safest for us. And it doesn't hurt as much that way, you know, and it's like a scab on a wound, you know, and it's starting to, okay, I can manage. And just as soon, I feel like just as soon as she just got to this, you know, this place of, okay, I'm okay again, he would just take that scab right off and he would speak another word to Abraham. And, you know, he just kept doing this. He would speak every few years. He'd talk to Abraham about the son. And it was 25 years. Or I would see. I believe it was that they waited 25 years since the very first word. Yeah, it wasn't until Abraham was 100 years old that the Lord fulfilled the promise. And he spoke to Abraham multiple times in that 25-year period about children. And so Sarah now, 25 years, she had already laid that hope to rest. It was reawakened, and then years went by, nothing happened. So I can just see her locking it away again, kind of tucking, okay, let's just keep going, you know, lock that hope away. And then all of a sudden, the Lord would speak about it again. And she went through this process, this painful, painful process of disappointment. And it just came to the point where she decided she was going to take matters into her own hands. And she gave Hagar to Abraham, and we all know what happened. And so, by faith, Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. So she took matters into her own hands to deliver herself. But the Lord was asking her to wait. The Lord was asking her to trust. The Lord was asking her not to bury your hope. Don't bury your hope. And that's what she kept doing, I think, because that's what I do. And so, the Lord keeps bringing it up. And it's like, don't bury your hope. Keep leaning and keep being raw before me and let me come and flood you in. And so there are times in the word where the words hope and wait are used interchangeably. Hope and wait are used interchangeably. So when we're waiting, you could say waiting equals hoping, right? God wants us not to bury our hope. Patient endurance is about waiting from a place of rest and trust and hope. And so we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope. And hope does not put us to shame. When we engage with the waiting in the way that the Lord intended, it not only matures us, but it produces hope in us. When we actually engage with him in the waiting that he, in the way that he wanted to, when we trust him, when we actually trust him from that place of rest, it actually produces that hope in us instead of burying that hope in us. And hope does not disappoint. And we have to believe his word is true when we can't see it. And we are going to see the goodness of the Lord. And so, you know, this hope is not unfounded optimism. It's not a wish upon a star, you know. It's the blessed assurance of our future destiny, which is based on God's love. And I feel like if we don't have hope, we have nothing. It's that Proverbs verse, where there is vision, the people perish. If we don't have hope, we have nothing. And so, you know, Sarah kept trying to bury this hope, and the Lord kept digging it back up because he loved her, and because he loved her too much to let her tuck it away. And so we don't find our hope in the promise that God gives us. We find our hope in the one who gives the promise. We tether our hearts to this rock, and to our Father who loves us and does not change like shifting shadows. He is our blessed hope. This is a delicate balance, though, because he wants us to believe the words that he gives us. He wants us to believe in the promises, but we don't put all of our hope in the promises. We put our hope in him, the one who gave the promise, the one who's standing right next to us as our best friend, walking it out until we see it. We believe God's promises to us, but our hope does not rest in his promise, but in him alone. True hope is more than a wish upon a star. It's the assurance, it's belief, it's a resting trust that what he said will come to pass, and that he is who he says he is, and that his nature, his true nature, is the same in every season, through every circumstance, without variance. And the biggest part of hope, I believe, is gratitude. We can't hope without gratitude. We can't hope without thankfulness. Hope only comes with gratitude. Without gratitude, we have no hope. And I believe the only way we can truly wait on the Lord is to hope in him, which means to give him thanks. I always tell my kids, you know, patience. And when I'm saying, just be patient, you know, and it's like, well, what is patience? They don't know, you know. Patience is waiting without whining. It's what I tell them. And I'm just like, God, help me, because I need to learn this big time. I need to learn how to patiently endure without whining all the way. And to truly patiently endure, we must have a grateful spirit instead of a complaining, grumbling, frustrated one. When the Israelites were in the desert, the Lord became angry with them because of their grumbling against him and against his chosen leader. So they were grumbling against the Lord, and they were grumbling against Moses, and God got mad because he kept trying to show them, he kept trying to correct them in gentleness and kindness. He gave them so much time, and they grumbled all around the desert as they just went in circles. They grumbled the whole way, and that's why they had to spend so long in the desert. I mean, just think about that for a minute. And so let's learn this lesson quickly myself. Sometimes it feels like the Lord is leading us around in circles in a desert that is very vast and very dry. And we can either choose to grumble all the way or follow him with thanksgiving in our hearts and a song in our hearts. And Philippians says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And let the peace of God, which surpasses understanding, guard your hearts and your minds through Christ. It's through thanksgiving. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice, right? When Joseph was in the prison, it says, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. And so, to me, you know, Joseph, all he wanted was to get out of prison. All he wanted was to be reunited with his family. And the Lord wasn't ready to do that for him yet. He wasn't ready to deliver him in the ways that he really wanted. But the Lord was with him, and he was giving him these graces, and I like to call them kisses, that the Lord is giving. You know, when we're in those seasons of trial and trouble and pressure, the Lord may not be ready to deliver you out of the thing that you really want him to do. You know, he's like, I don't want to do that yet. I want you to patiently endure. But along the way, he is going to give you kisses of his grace, kisses of his sustaining power, kisses of his love to encourage you, to strengthen you, to sustain you, to keep you, just your heart alive in his love. And we, if we're not careful, we can miss that. You know, we can be so focused on what you're not doing that we miss what he is doing and all the ways that he's trying to, you know, kiss us and give us love and give us that grace. And so I want to, in those seasons, I want to be looking intently for the ways that the Lord is showing me, I'm with you and I've got you and I love you and I love to give you good gifts. And, you know, so many of us are waiting for him to deliver us from circumstances that we didn't get ourselves into. It's not our fault, you know, and we get frustrated because we're not seeing his deliverance. And it would be a shame to miss all the things that he is doing to encourage us and to sustain us and to remind us of his love. And so, you know, we don't count those things as less. Those things are just as important and just as much gifts from God. And so we want to be thankful and worship God. He struck me with this verse in Hebrews 12 where it says, therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us be thankful and so worship God acceptably with reverence and awe. Our gratitude is our worship. It's our living sacrifice of worship. And I was just thinking, you know, if worshiping God is, or is, if thanking him, if thankfulness is worship to him, what is our grumbling? You know, we worship God with our thankfulness in the midst of the desert wanderings. And we not only thank him for the kisses, but also for the trouble. I was asking the Lord recently, Lord, you know, why? Like, why this situation? Why this circumstance? Why did you put me in this? And he so clearly said, it's for your chastisement. And I was like, do you know what chastisement means? Because guess what? I looked it up. Chastisement means to discipline, to rebuke or reprimand severely, to punish, especially by beating, to refine or purify. And one version says to spank, which, you know, I told JC the other day, I was like, you know how you get spanking sometimes and it's for your good. I love you. That's why I'm doing this. But guess what? Mommy gets spankings too. God told me this week that he's spanking me. And so, you know, and that's really tough, you know, to hear that. But we know that his chastisement is for the purpose of refining and purifying and actually rescuing us from our own destruction. Proverbs 19 says, chasten your son while there is hope. And do not set your heart on his destruction. God does not want us to destroy ourselves, and we will if he doesn't chasten us. That's what happens to us. That's why we chasten our children. That's why we discipline our children. We don't want them to go to their own destruction. We love them too much. And we know that his discipline is for our good. Hebrews 12, my son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. Hebrews calls this a word of encouragement. To me, I'm like, yes, that is, but wow, that's a hard one. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children. God disciplines us for our good in order that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness for those who have been trained by it. Therefore, strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees. Make level paths for your feet so that the lame may not be disabled, but rather healed. He wants to use us to heal the lame. to heal the disabled. He wants us to use. He wants to use us for His glory. He wants to create in us holiness. And he continued, you know, this dialogue that we were having, and he said, you know, Amy, do you love me? And you say that you love me. You say that you love me. Now do what I've asked you to do. Do what I've called you to do, and stop complaining about it. And I was like, oh, you're right. I needed to hear that. And that's the problem. I needed to hear it because I wasn't doing that. And, you know, in that moment, I was like, yes, Lord, yes. I say yes. I'm going to do what you've called me to do, and I'm going to stop complaining about it all the way in this desert. But you're going to have to help me because my spirit is willing, but my flesh is weak, and I really actually have no idea how I'm going to do that because I just really need you to help me with that and to know even where to start. Because I wasn't complaining. Mostly my complaining came out of a wound. It came out of hurt that's real, that's valid before the Lord. He cares about my wounds. He cares about, you know, ways that I am in actual pain because of things that are out of my control. Joseph was in pain not because he sinned, not because he, you know, did it to himself. Wrong things were done to him, and it caused pain. The Lord cares about that. But he also cares about our response to it. And my response was not right. So he was correcting me. And I woke up the next morning after he said that with my heart set on getting ahead of this thing. And I just started to say, okay, I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to do, but what I'm going to, you know, how to just really overcome this. But I'm just going to start thanking him right now out loud for the things that I've been complaining about. And I just went through, I just started thanking him. Lord, thank you for this thing that is my cross. Thank you for this thing that you're chastising me with. Thank you for your chastisement. Thank you for spanking me. You know, wouldn't we all love our kids to come up and tell us that? Thank you for these gifts. These hardships are actually gifts from God. Thank you for their purposes in my life. Thank you for, you know, for using them. And I pray for your will in all of these things, in all of these areas. And so, you know, Mike Bickle has this quote, and I love it. He said, it's about true victory. He says, victory doesn't begin in your life when you have a full transformation of an area of weakness. Victory begins when you set your heart in that area long before you ever get the breakthrough. Breakthrough brings the victory to fullness, but the victory begins with the setting of the heart, the intentions of the heart. And so when we set our hearts to trust, to rest, to be thankful in the midst, we have victory. And I wanted to set my heart in a tangible way on this road to learning, you know, to follow him through the desert with singing and rejoicing instead of with grumbling. And so I just woke up. I'm going to thank him for it. You know, Corrie Ten Boom, you've all heard the story. When she and her sister Betty were in the concentration camp and they're in there with the fleas. And Betty's like, you need, Corey, you got to thank God for those fleas. Thank him for the fleas. Thank him for this hardship, this trouble, this awful situation. And they would even thank him for putting them in that camp so that they could save many lives. Many people came to know Jesus right before they died because they were there. They had this perspective. They had this eternal perspective. And the Lord was right there in the middle of it with them. And so we can thank God for the thing that we don't like the most. You know, the thing that it's like when I went into teaching, it was purely an act of obedience. I love it now. But in the public school system, it's a very different reality. And he knows what I'm talking about. And so I said yes. I hated it. I hated having to say yes to that. Especially that first year, it was so hard. We were newlyweds, first year marriage. We had two prayer meetings in our house every day. It was my first year teaching. And I would go out to lunch each day, and I would think, I could just not come back. I'm just going to leave. I'm just going to leave and not even look back. Not even going to tell anybody. I'm just gone. And the only thing that kept me going back was I know I would be in direct disobedience to what the Lord told me to do. And so what do I start doing in the midst of that? I thank him. Lord, thank you for this job. Thank you for making me a teacher. Thank you for, we're thanking him because he has plans and purposes that we can't see yet. And he knows the desires of our heart, and we're entrusting those things to him. I don't want to go chase after those things. I want to chase after you, no matter what the road looks like. And I want to rest in you, rest in your provision, rest in your love, knowing that you're with me. And I want to give you praise and thank you for that. And so in the end of Joseph's story, we know that he learned to wait. He took on the injustices that were inflicted upon him. But God didn't forget about Joseph. God had not lost control of the situation, even though it looked like all was lost. He was stuck, and there was quite literally no way for Joseph to get out of this hole, that the Lord had a day for his deliverance, and he had a day set in store for his rising up. And Joseph's take was, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. What's even more amazing is Joseph's response to his brothers. He tells his brothers, I will provide for you and your children. He reassured them and spoke kindly to them. His brothers, who hated him growing up, who probably mocked him, made fun of him, threw him in a hole, sold him as a slave, his brothers were responsible for all of this wrongfully, and that his father didn't even know he was alive. His brothers were responsible for all of it. For a response like that, I'm going to provide for you and your children. I'm going to reassure you, your hearts, because you need it. I'm going to speak kindly to you. You know he did not live all of those years in bitterness. He did not live all of those years in fret. He did not live all of those years grumbling to God against them. He learned to wait. He refrained from anger and turned from wrath. He learned how to patiently endure, to trust God with his life, to trust God with all the promises, to trust God with all of his desires, to trust God to deliver him, to trust God. He even said thank you to the Lord for this situation and thank you for my brothers. He probably prayed blessings on them, because we know that's how we free our hearts from bitterness, is we pray for them. We love them. We bless them. And so he didn't live in bitterness and accusation against the Lord in that season, but he overcame and he learned how to rest and to hope. And as a result, he saw the promises of God fulfilled and he saw his deliverance and his heart was right with God in the end. And so in this season, I don't know if you're in this season or if you're not yet, you will be eventually one day. Don't give up. In this season of waiting to the Lord, look for his favor. Look for his kisses. Trust him. Learn to rest. It's a choice. I have to tell that to myself. It's a choice. And I'm going to choose to praise you through this desert as you're taking us through circles in the desert. I'm just going to praise you all the way and sing songs of praise. And I'm going to not do it perfectly. I'm going to fail sometimes. And I'm going to come back and I'm going to try again. And I'm going to ask you, Lord, please strengthen me. Let me experience complete fullness in this area. And just like Mike Bickle was, you know, said in the victory, true victory is not when you have the fullness, but when you set your heart. So I know that I'm victorious already, but I want to get there to the fullness. And so Jeremiah 17 says, never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, and faithful in prayer. But blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. They will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought, and it never fails to bear fruit. And so I want to partner with the Lord. I want to fight against my own flesh, you know, and I want to learn to rest in him and to patiently endure with him. Do what he's called you to do and let him do the rest, you know, and just sing all the way.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.